tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook. Have you begun to wonder why it is so easy to get yourself into debt?
I'm talking about the pre-1980 deregulation period. The best customer of the community banking system was somebody who took an installment loan. You sat down with your loan officer, and if your income demonstrated that you could pay it off over a certain period of time, you got the loan. So the best customer in the old days was someone who could pay off the loan. Today, in the deregulated environment, the best customer is somebody who will never pay off their loan. And of course, those people are desperate and will pay and accept higher interest as well as higher fees. And that's where the industry has become addicted to these extraordinary returns on consumer credit, or what they call revolving credit.
People's Tribune Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publishes the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribunal del Pueblo. Contact and ordering information will be provided following the show. The original voice of PTR, Mike Thornton, provides us with an interesting interview with author Robert Manning. The interview focuses on why credit is a billion-dollar industry and how it controls our lives.
We are joined on the line by our guest, Robert Manning. He's a Gannett Professor of the Humanities at Rochester Institute of Technology, also founder of Newtonian Finances Limited, and author of Credit Card Nation. Robert Manning, thank you for being with us today.
Well, it's a pleasure to be joining you.
We're going to talk about predatory lending and all of that goes with that. But I guess the question I wanted to ask you, it seems that we have a predilection in this country to spend money we don't have. And we have our would-be governor out here telling us that he teaches his six-year-old not to spend more money than the six-year-old has. But as a nation, we seem really into the whole credit thing. Why the heck is that?
Well, what we've seen is really an extraordinary transformation of our attitudes towards credit and debt over the last 20 years. And part of this is, which is the Folk Credit Card Nation, is the emergence of a deregulated financial service system where the big banks were losing money on their third world loans and, you know, commercial real estate and home mortgages during the 82-83 recession, and they found out that as people were being laid off from the major industrial sectors of the economy, that they were willing to borrow money at an increasingly higher rate. The banks have become incredibly addicted. If there's one group that's addicted to the credit card usage, it's the top 10 banks in America that control 80% of the credit card market. On the other hand, of course, we've seen the marketing of the American dream, and even though household income has been stagnant, we see and we have this predilection of viewing success as doing better than the prior generation or doing better than our parents. There's this emphasis that in the media that you're not successful unless your house is bigger and your SUV is bigger and you have a more exotic vacation than your parents. And many people, of course, that can't do that find themselves deeper and deeper in debt.
Our guest is Robert Manning. He's the author of Credit Card Nation, and you're listening to KVMR-FM. Yeah, it really does seem like there's this whole push to get people to certainly create their self-worth out of stuff, out of things. But how is it that there seems to be so much of this credit available? It's a big change from when I was younger, I think, when it comes to these various banks and financial institutions that are offering credit. I mean, is this part of this whole sort of deregulation model that we've seen where now these institutions can offer this kind of credit to people and just keep sucking them in?
Well, and of course, that's such a good point, because we went from the Great Depression, when our whole financial system was risk, and we had a system that was based on community banking. And in that point, and I'm talking about the pre-1980 deregulation period, the best customer of the community banking system was somebody who took an installment loan. You sat down with your loan officer, and if your income demonstrated that you could pay it off over a certain period of time, you got the loan. So the best customer in the old days was someone who could pay off the loan. Today, in the deregulated environment, the best customer is somebody who will never pay off their loan. And, of course, those people are desperate and will pay and accept higher interest as well as higher fees. And that's where the industry has become addicted to these extraordinary returns on consumer credit, or what they call revolving credit. In fact, the average return on a credit card loan portfolio is three times higher than the average return on the average financial service product.
I want to get back to something you said, because you said that at one point it was somebody who would pay off their loan that was the most valued customer, the ideal customer. And now it's someone who will never pay off the loan is the ideal customer. And I think you just to kind of expand on that, if you will, because is it just that they've become such a profit center? I mean, how do we go from that place to this place?
It really is extraordinary. We're today in the credit card nation, students who have never had a full-time job can get thousands of dollars in credit card lines of credit before they graduate. Yet their grandparents, who could have had a stellar 50-year career history, are denied jobs by the same financial institutions. The key here, and keep in mind that one half of all credit card debt is resold in what's called securitized debts, that basically, because they get such a high interest on your monthly payments on credit cards, they can resell it as a high-interest bond. In fact, this year, when you're talking about the average return on a one-year certificate of deposit of under 2%, the average sale price for credit card debt is over 19%, and that's because of also the huge increase in fees. And what deregulation has ultimately meant was all those protections that were created during the Great Depression, restrictions against interstate banking to gobble up the small bank from the big banks up north so that it would protect depositors' monies would be reinvested in their communities, or the Glass-Steagall Act, which would prevent banks from having shenanigan deals with the companies they were loaning money to. Of course, we've learned a lot about that recently on Wall Street. All of those statutes were taken down, and credit cards played a huge role in this statutory change by enabling big banks to move to different states and then sell their credit cards in other states. So ultimately what we have now is a national banking system where local and state governments no longer have the power to influence the terms and conditions of the loans that are made by these big what are called national money banks. And that's why we no longer have effective state usury laws or effective regulations, such as what would be the caps on a fee on, a late submission of a payment on a credit card.
Our guest is Robert Manning. He's author of Credit Card Nation. My name is Mike Thornton. This is Public Planet. So, Mr. Manning, I want to get back to something I thought I heard you say, and then I saw this movie called Rounders, right? And This guy gets out of prison, and he finds out that in actuality, the debt that he had owed to some mobster had been sold to another mobster while he was in prison. And it sounds to me that, I mean, it's kind of the same thing that you're talking about. I mean, I get in debt on a credit card to somebody, and then they cut a deal with somebody else who bought my debt, and, you know, now I owe them, right?
Absolutely. That's why what's extraordinary, and 25 years ago, the top 10 banks owned about less than a quarter of the credit card market. Today, the top 10 banks control over 80%. So a lot of you have a credit card that might have the name of your local bank, but it's already been sold to a Citibank or a Chase Manhattan or an MBNA. They just think that you're going to look more kindly towards your local community name, the credit card, and not take a front that it's actually owned and administered by one of the top 10 banks.
Somebody told me quite some time ago, and perhaps you could clarify this, that very often what happens is that people will go to one of these big banks for credit, and no big bank in particular, but whatever, and they get told, well, sorry, you know, we can't give you credit, but you might want to try this other organization. And, of course, it's a higher interest rate. It's all of that stuff. And then, indeed, you find out that the original bank actually owns the other organization that they sent you to. And so they're actually giving you credit anyway, just charging you a higher interest rate for it. I mean, does that make sense what I'm saying?
Oh, it's absolutely correct. In fact, when Congress permitted the merger of Citibank with Travelers Group. And, of course, that was orchestrated by Secretary of Treasury Rubin, who's now Senior Vice President of, what else, Citibank. This was a major watershed event because it meant the complete dismantling of the regulatory structures in terms of identity fraud, in terms of protecting private financial information. Now Travelers Group can use the information they have and then send it over to the Citibank folks. How many people have had a situation where they have an account with one institution and they find out that their interest rates have been raised because of their payment history on another account with a different financial institution? So one of the products of deregulation today is you don't have a relationship with a specific bank. Because your information can be bought and sold and traded with impunity, you have a relationship with the entire financial service industry, which, of course, will manipulate it to their best advantage. So if they know you're heavily indebted, they're not going to let you get a low-interest home equity loan. They're going to try to push you to a finance company that's a subsidiary of the parent company.
Well, that's a pretty good scam if you can work it out. But then again, they spend a lot of money and political effort in making sure that the laws are drawn up so they can do those kinds of things.
Keep in mind, the number one campaign contributor to President Bush was MBNA, the credit card company, that the financial service industry is one of the leading sources of PAC money for the reelection of our national and state-level officials. And the fact is, by promoting and encouraging the growth of national banks, it essentially takes away or usurps the ability of communities and states to determine what they consider to be appropriate costs of credit. When you do that, it means that only Congress can regulate these banks, which makes it very easy for the banking industry to simply pay off the members of Congress that are on these key financial service committees. That's why we've seen such a dramatic turnaround in the dismantling of consumer rights in regard to financial services. It only takes a few members of Congress to prevent a consumer protective bill to come and become law.
Well, this isn't a Republican or a Democrat issue. I mean, they're all in on this.
Oh, this is bipartisan. They talk about the Bankruptcy Reform Act as a sense of a form of a full employment act for lobbyists, but also a continuous source of reelection funding for Democrats and Republicans in Congress.
Our guest is Robert Manning, author of Credit Card Nation. Mr. Manning, let me ask you this, because I guess the thing that I've noticed and over the years is I think back when I was younger and on TV, those kinds of things. I mean, you would never see these ads for borrowing money and are you in debt and refinancing your home and all of those kinds of things. And they're just everywhere now, all day, every day. Is this an example of this issue of predatory lending that, and I don't necessarily mean so much the debt consolidation things, because we could talk about those, but I mean, it just seems that there's this whole deal of just pounding on people, to borrow, refinance, I mean, all day. And I guess what I'm asking is that part of this whole predatory lending thing?
Well, and again, that gets us right back to the whole issue of what was the goal of deregulation. What you see is that the lure of easy credit, it makes it sound like it's almost cost-free. The reality is that once you're in the pipeline of getting in debt, then there's just easy money for refinancing, a late fee here and there. What's critical, and let me give you an example of what disturbs me and what I testified against in the House Financial Services Committee last month, is that now that we don't have any control over our personal financial information, there is a form of predatory lending where certain finance companies look for people who own homes and look for them who have high levels of unsecured consumer debt like credit cards, and then they directly contact these people, and they may have, say, an 8% mortgage loan and 22% credit card debt, and they say, hey, consolidate your credit card debt into your home mortgage. It'll cost you less than what you're paying now, but now the interest rate's going to be, say, 14%, and they don't escrow the taxes. And what you're going to see is a lot of people are going to lose their homes, because even if they went into bankruptcy, they could have discharged the unsecured consumer debt, but now that it's been consolidated in their homes, it's not going to do them much good. So the key is now is that we don't control our personal financial information, and there's some very smart and intelligent people that know what are our weak points to encourage us to borrow more money than we can possibly repay. And it's so profitable, keep in mind, there's more money to be made financing the purchase of a product than making it and selling it. And that's the crisis in our society today.
You are tuned in to People's Tribune Radio with our guest Robert Manning discussing predatory lending with Mike Thornton.
I had actually heard something like that. Is it Ford Finance or something?
GE
Finance that or GM Finance that simply makes more money financing automobiles than actually selling automobiles.
Absolutely. And in fact, if you look like a Circuit City, which reported that 53% of its profits were due to the financing rather than the sale of their products, you begin to see why there's a reluctance in Congress to enact some very strong consumer protection laws, because it could push many of those corporations into bankruptcy.
Our guest is Robert Manning, author of Credit Card Nation. Well, Mr. Manning, I guess the question that comes to my mind immediately is, okay, all of these people kind of get sucked into this deal of refinancing their homes, consolidating their debt, all of that, and then they default. Their homes are taken. I mean, what's going to happen? I mean, all these financial institutions then will be stuck with a bunch of houses that nobody can afford to buy. I mean, what's the incentive in all of that?
Well, part of it, again, is they take the origination fees, like the cream off the top, and then they resell and flip those loans. What I'd mentioned earlier about securitized bonds, which end up maybe being purchased by an institutional investor, which may end up in your pension fund, your retirement fund, in your insurance company's investment portfolio. The key for the industry is they need to find more people that are willing to pay outrageous amounts of finance charges, and once they get them, they resell that debt to somebody else and hope that the defaults don't occur by the time they get them. However, the reality is that even during this recession, we're looking at almost 95% of Americans, 94% that pay their credit card bills. We're not a bunch of deadbeats in this society. And in fact, the top three reasons that people declare bankruptcy is for medical expenses, they lost their job, or a personal crisis such as a divorce. So the reality is that people do pay their bills. It's a myth that most people want to walk away from them.
But as people get farther and farther in debt, they're able to pay less and less on those bills, and in many cases wind up paying the minimum payment, which then qualifies these credit card debts as what I've heard referred to as evergreen loans, because then they're never paid off.
And that goes back to my earlier point that the banks knowingly are loaning people money they know can never possibly be repaid, and they're just trying to get them to pay as much of on those double-digit finance charges as possible before they sell it off to somebody else. That's why we've seen some very intriguing bankruptcies in the financial service industry. And usually they're very poor loans and things like unsecured debt, like credit cards, such as Provident Bank.
Then they seem to have this whole next level, if you will, and maybe I'm just creating a next level to it. And that's the whole issue of these payday loans, which seem to be more and more advertisement going, and then the whole sort of rent-to-own thing, which has been going on for a long time. And this is where they reach into the pockets of absolutely the people who are the most vulnerable, really, right?
Well, absolutely. And keep in mind, if you are getting a payday loan, it means you have a regular job and a checking account. And the same thing with rent-to-own companies. I have a whole chapter in my book, and I take John Madden to task, the NFL announcer, that what you see happening is that these predatory loans that were used to take advantage of poor people in largely inner-city communities, they were so successful, and that they've now found that middle-class people with good jobs are so heavily in debt that they're so desperate not to acknowledge their financial distress that even they are willing, even with $40,000 and $50,000 jobs, to take out loans with 500% and 600% annual interest rates. So what we're seeing now is the marketing of this high-interest form of loans and debt to the American middle class that we never saw before.
Yeah, and that's really important, I think, to point out once again, is that we're not talking 20% or 50% or 100%. This is 300, 400, 500% interest short-term loans. I mean, it's like loan shark kind of pawn shop kind of thing.
Well, in fact, when I was looking at the cost of a rent-to-own contract, the industry emphasizes that most people only keep their products rent-to-own for 3 to 4 months. But if you actually look at it, in 3 or 4 months, they could have paid it for it in full in cash. So that shows you how profitable that industry is. And in fact, interestingly, the shorter the term of the rent-to-own contract, the higher the interest rate. Again, going back to my point that they don't want you to ever pay it off. Rent-to-own in general, I've found to average in terms of the finance charge of somewhere between 180 and 350%, plus there are a lot of extra fees and insurance products that are mandated that cost even higher.
I remember reading something, and I think it was entitled the $5,000 VCR or something like that. And in essence, what it was a rent-to-own VCR that in and of itself was worth maybe $100 or so. But because of, you know, recycling it and recycling it and recycling it, that they had made several thousand dollars off of that. I mean, it's a true, true scam. I guess the real question is, what is it that people can do to, I mean, get them, A, when they're in, if they find themselves in this trap, to get out of it or keep themselves out of it, or perhaps do something to structurally change the way these businesses operate?
Well, I'm glad you raised that point, because I do have a website at creditcardnation.com that really addresses a lot of the consumer issues of how to more effectively use their credit cards and other forms of financial credit. And also my book will be coming out in the spring, Give Yourself Credit, addressing precisely the kinds of policies that we need, but also how to use your credit cards, other forms of credit more effectively. The first thing people need to understand is there something that was outside of their control that got them into debt, you know, like a huge medical expense? If they're never going to pay it back, hey, you know, we let Enron and WorldCom declare bankruptcy and walk away from their debts as well as their responsibility to their shareholders. If you're in that situation, immediately go to a professional and decide if bankruptcy is the right course for you. If it's something that you got into a little too much debt too quickly and you can honestly accept the responsibility of repaying your debt, then you need to start figuring out the difference between your needs, your wants, and your desires. Get those double-digit interest rates down to single-digit interest rates and begin to get your expenditures under control. In other words, is something psychological and emotional that's leading you to buy things that you really don't need versus I lost my job, I'm now making half of what I used to make, I have these old obligations from my past income, it's going to take me a while to work them out. This is where you really, I encourage you to go to my website, look at the budget savior estimator, really start to rein in where the costs are, where can you start managing your money better. I give you a sense of, for example, when you get your credit card statement, send in your bill that day, because if you're paying 18% interest, if you hold it to the due date 2 weeks later, you're essentially paying 18% versus 1% in your savings account. It's those kinds of tricks where the credit card industry wants you to play by their rules, which are the most profitable, and we're trying to encourage you to learn your consumer rights and make that credit work for you rather than the profits of the bank.
Well, that's a really, really good point. And it's really important to recognize, particularly if you're under a lot of economic pressure, that, you know, what might look good on the surface is not necessarily going to be a really good deal. And in fact, what might look good on the surface is the absolute worst deal that you could get yourself into, even though your goal is to trying to find a way to responsibly get yourself out of trouble.
Well, and again, for example, I try to show people how you use two credit cards. One has all the benefits. So if you're going to charge a car, you want to get free insurance and not pay for it, that's going to have the highest interest rates. But what you want to do then is, if you carry a balance, use those membership services and then shift that balance to the low interest credit card. I mean, if somebody's going to offer you a 0% balance transfer, it's, in their mind, pay me a little now and pay me a lot later. It's their loss leader. If you're simply shifting your debt in a treadmill, hoping that you can keep going from one low interest to another without a plan to reduce your principal, you've got a very serious financial situation that needs other issues to get it under control. And that is when you need to see a financial counselor.
Our guest has been Robert Manning. He's the author of Credit Card Nation. Mr. Manning, what's the title of the new book coming out again?
Give Yourself Credit.
And the website one more time, please.
Creditcardnation.com.
That is not it for PTR. Up next, we have a special treat. Spoken word artist and visionary Somos One was able to provide this spoken word piece on the streets of Fruitvale in Oakland, California.
All right, Somos One, International Boulevard. It is the hour. I look in your eyes and draw my power from the light. I use my insight drawn from before to fight. Con mi corazón y mente enfrente, trabajo con mi gente espiritualmente, escuchando a gente. Y cuando me pongo a pensar, agarro el agradecimiento y me pongo a cantar o gritar para expresar cuánto les trato de amar. Y quiero regresar al mar, donde el agua sigue dando. Me sigo caminando, ligeramente, para solo dejar huellas en las mentes de la gente que quiere. Porque neta que muchos han sido contenidos psicológicamente. You see, they try and commodify the tears that fall from my eye. But I cry in rhymes unconfinable to any set of lines or places and times. Like light shines, we radiate heat. We stain concrete streets like we were soil. Roots grow through us like we was oil. I never spoil. My style always comes hella fresh. Like a sidewalk smile that God blessed and filled with the love of heaven above and all around. I write this down like someone that's ready to fight for the rights already proved alienable. Mad props to those soldiers that keep smashing up against that empire desire's mental retaining wall. When I was younger, I used to crawl, but now I fly. Sky high, above the lies and the hate. I contemplate my escape and know I don't believe in fate, nor coincidence. I draw my strength from faith and persistence and resistance. People ask me what you do. I say I work with students to provide assistance, to increase their distance from this system of maintenance. Because in reality, that's what this government be. A way to keep the rich rich and the people wanting things instead of wanting to be free. But not me, you see. I promised my family that I would never give in, but give out and shout proud to make the gears grind loud. Expose the shroud like the wool that helps to pull the dollars out the schools and all the hospitals. Selecting only the books that keep the fools looking wise, thinking themselves unable to be criticized. Me, I resist compromise, though I do reconsider and rearrange. Thanks to family and good journalists, my mind has broken through the chains and kept pain from taking over, because now I realize that the power of four-leaf clovers and rabbit's feet and crucifixes is this faith that people put in them. Couldn't that then mean that as human beings, we have the strength in the form of faith and a spirit bigger than just you and I? Some call it God, some call it Allah, some call it I and I. And who am I, just one whose third eye awoke and won't go back to sleep as long as there's a machine that's trying to keep my peeps wanting things instead of wanting to be free? But do not confuse what we do with philanthropy, servility, or even nobility. What we do is called our responsibility. Peace.
That ends another edition of People's Tribune Radio. PTR is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. If you would like to contact the League for speakers, questions, or our other print and media resources, you may do so by calling 1-800-691-6888. The number again is 1-800-691-6888. Also, if you can, check us out on the internet at www.lrna.org. I'm Kenny Shook, and on behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, please join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.